This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning, I'm Wong Shaoning, and with me is Lin Mark, and of course we are The Morning Run. It is now 7:07 in the morning, Monday the 28th of September, the start of a new week. Now in about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking to Chua Hak Bin, senior economist at Maybank Kim Eng based in Singapore, on ASEAN economies and their pandemic recovery. But in the meantime, let's have a quick recap on how global markets closed on Friday. Because in US, it was a stellar day. The Dow was up 1.3%. S&P 500 was up 1.6%, while the Nasdaq rallied up 2.2%. Meanwhile, looking at Asia, Nikkei was up 0.5%. Hang Seng wasn't so lucky. It was down 0.3%. Shanghai Composite was also down 0.1%. Straits Times Index was up almost 1%, while the KLCI was up 0.6%. So for some insights into global markets, we have on the line with us Stephen Innes, Asia-Pacific market strategist with Axie Trader. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, good. First up, let's ask about the Fed, because they are calling for fresh stimulus, one clear sign that economic growth in the U.S. has stalled. Now, what's preventing Congress from doing this?
Great question. I just think it's a great divide on philosophical differences between the two parties. The Democrats are looking to increase stimulus and increase the deficits quite greatly. However, the Republicans feel that they've put enough money into the system right now. And, you know, obviously, there's a great divide here, because putting more money and increasing deficits is actually quite negative over the long term. But will the short term benefits of more money help? This is the issue, and the Feds really believe it will. I think what the Feds are trying to draw attention to here, in my view, is the fact that as we move into colder temperatures in the Northern Hemisphere, the incidences of COVID will rise. And so Main Street itself will need some additional level of support, whether that be employment subsidies or even companies in the servicing sector, which are going to continue to remain beaten down, and possibly even more beaten down, as the divide between servicing sectors and manufacturing sector gap widens if COVID does resurface again. And by the looks of things, looking at the data in Europe, it looks to be, the curve looks to be trending higher as expected. And looking at some of the data coming out of the States over the weekend, yep, starting to pop up again as the winter months come in. And that's the greatest concern for the markets right now, is that we move back towards move away from sort of the ultralight type sort of mobility restrictions into more draconian measures, which will probably send the economies back into a slump again.
So, Stephen, you painted quite a somewhat bleak picture because of, you know, the resurgence of COVID-19. And I think we see that in the S&P 500 and even in global markets, which are kind of turning down, turning south. So are there any sectors that investors should look at as defensive hedges amidst this current sell-off?
Yeah, very interesting. The stay-at-home hedges continue to do well. You look at Apple, for instance, that continues to pick up. I think the tech sector is obviously, just looking at the way the data is going, despite the huge buy-ins we've seen and really extended positioning in the tech sector, continues to be a go-to trade, go-to hedge. Well, after all, you know, if you have more lockdowns, more people are going to stay at home. Companies' work-from-home mandates will extend. Actually, I think they're just going to continue to extend forever, really. I think people have proven that they can work from home, and I think that's going to be the new wave of the future. That, to me, suggests that there'll be new people demand better internet technologies, will demand better cloud hosting technologies, and also demand better hardware technology. So all of this really points and paints a very favorable picture for the tech sector. I think that still remains the flavor du jour, so to speak.
And let's bring the conversation back to this part of the world, because how will the addition of Chinese government bonds to the FTSE World Government Bond Index affect capital markets? And does this mean the internationalization of the yuan?
It's a colossal. It's great. I mean, you know, right now, the Chinese government bonds are included in several other global indices, but the FTSE has the largest AUM of passive investors worldwide that actually track and mark to mark that benchmark. So this is quite positive. We think that, you know, obviously we do believe a lot of the active money has already moved in, but there's that element of passive money that still has to come into the markets, which will start trickling in when it goes through. The official announcement date goes through on October the 20th. October 2021. So we're still a ways away, but still, this is very, very supportive. We're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of about $150 billion worth of U.S. dollars coming in initially. So yeah, that's quite positive. But I think over in the broader picture, with regards to the internationalization of the yuan, I think this is part and parcel to China trying to internalize not only their capital markets away from the reliance on the U.S., but they're also opening up other areas here. They're looking to do more trade in the yuan in the region, which is quite good for the basket when you think about it, because it eliminates that U.S. dollar volatility and it provides importers and exports with a proper closer proximity, regional proximity as to how the exchange rates could work. So this is quite favorable. I do see a continued move to the internationalization of the yuan, but really the big stumbling block will they allow it to completely free float. And that's the real key. I think they're getting there. I think they're going to continue to move to that area. And I think over the next 2 to 3 years, we'll probably see a free floating yuan. And that's when the big impulse for the internationalization, in my view, will come to the fore.
And still staying on bonds, I think Malaysia breathed a sigh of relief because we were retained on this World Global Bond Index, but still on the negative watch list. Now, is this positive for our bond markets? And how do you see this impacting the ringgit? Because this morning when I looked at Bloomberg against the US dollar, it's at 4.17.
Yeah, the ringgit's getting knocked down a little bit because of the broader go-to U.S. dollar. Right now, U.S. dollar is being viewed as a safe haven with the resurgence in COVID in Europe and also to hedge against some nascent U.S. political risk. But really, the ringgit is still in pretty good standing here, in my view. I think this was pretty much anticipated that they remain on the watch list and probably will continue to do. But we think the BNM here is having really constructive discussions with the FTSE. And, they're trying to comply by opening up the currency markets gradually. Will we return to a full NDF market anytime soon? Probably unlikely, but they're taking those proactive steps to make the currency more open. Look, for bond investors, it's all about having an open and transparent currency because they need to hedge those full returns. So without having an active NDF market, that continues to weigh. If we ever get to that point again, well, watch out. I think we're going to have a big rally in the Malaysian ringgit and a big rally in the Malaysian bonds again. But, we have to sort of temper those bullish expectations, given the fact that it's very unlikely we're going to move back towards an NDF again.
So, Stephen, do you expect the ringgit to stay where it is for the moment at 4.17, or will they perhaps weaken further?
Oh, I'm quite bullish on the ringgit going forward. I think, we're just getting a little bit of knockdown here. The resurgence of COVID is weighing on oil prices. That's a little bit negative. And, the surprising demand for U.S. dollars over the short term is very, very surprising. Look, the Fed is on path for interest rates for zero for the next 5 years. And, you're looking at the yield advantage that Malaysia has, and even from a real yield advantage, because inflation remains very tepid in Malaysia. That would suggest to me that we're going to see more demand for bonds over the near term. Malaysian bonds, and this should weigh quite favorably for the ringgit going into year end. But I mean, caution has to always ring when it comes to the currency markets. Currency markets is very, very fickle; could move up or down on any given day. It feels like we're sort of hanging at the edge of a yo-yo string, trying to anticipate where the next moves on currency markets is going to be these days.
Okay, thank you for your time. That was Stephen Innes, Asia Pacific Market Strategist at Axie Trader, reminding us once again that currencies are extremely difficult to forecast, and it's like being at the end of a yo-yo. And although he's a little bit more optimistic on the ringgit, which is good, Lynn, what did you take away from his conversation?
I was amused by his comments that he expects this stay-at-home, work-from-home situation to extend forever. And as a result, he points out certain stay-at-home hedges, so technology, Apple, for example, because, with companies potentially looking at exploring the work-from-home for longer, people are going to need more internet.
Yeah, more internet, more gadgets. And, it looks like tech stock prices can only go one way, which is up. But up next, we'll be speaking to Chua Hak Bin, senior economist at Maybank Kim Eng, based in Singapore, for a report card on which economies in the region are weathering the COVID-19 pandemic better than others. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.